Welcome to the PFA podcast. This week, we chat one-on-one with one of the A-League's true gentlemen, Osama Malik. In our wide-ranging chat, Osama shares with us his Sudanese background, his connection to Africa, his first journey back there, and what the country still means to him. He also discusses growing up in Adelaide, his football heroes, and why he feels such a strong responsibility to inspire young Sudanese Australians. I hope you enjoy this week's podcast just as much as I enjoyed spending the afternoon with Osama. So we're really pleased to have Osama Malik in today. You're one of the A-League's true gentlemen, so welcome, Osama.
Thank you for the nice intro.
You're welcome, mate, anytime at all. So thanks for taking the time to have a chat to us, mate. And I guess the logical point to start at is you yourself, in terms of growing up in Adelaide, your family, and what your childhood was like in South Australia, mate.
Yeah, look, I had a pretty standard childhood growing up in a nice little suburb in Adelaide. Pretty quiet. Obviously had a nice little suburb there, and I had two older sisters and an older brother, so I was always kept in check pretty well, and I had two great and supportive parents who always looked out for me and supported me and disciplined me when I needed to be disciplined. So yeah, it's a fairly basic, fairly standard Australian upbringing, really.
Absolutely. Can you tell me a little bit about the background of your parents? I know your father was born overseas in Sudan. Can you tell me a little bit more about him and also about your mum as well, mate?
Yeah, my father was born in northern Sudan, in Khartoum, and he left there when he was about 17 or 18 years old to study in Greece, because those opportunities weren't too readily available for him in Sudan. So he went to Greece, and my mom was born in Australia to Australian parents, and she just happened to be travelling in Europe probably in the late 70s, and she met my dad, who was studying, and they took a liking to each other, and within a few months they decided that they liked each other enough to get married. And so yeah, that's how that story started, and it's a pretty amazing story the more I think about it.
So did they stay in Europe for a while, mate, or did they move pretty quickly back from Europe to Australia?
Yeah, so once they met each other, obviously by that stage my dad had finished his studies, and he was actually working as a civil engineer in He was working in from Libya. He was working in Libya and coming back to Greece to do further studies. But obviously when he met Mum, they decided they were going to get married. So they had a ceremony in Sudan. They flew to... So Mum met all my dad's family. And then they flew back to Australia to meet my mum's family. And I'm sure they got a bit of a surprise when they met Dad for the first time.
Absolutely, mate. I imagine at the time, you know, it was a very, I guess, different world. People travelling off around to the other side of the world was pretty different. Have you heard any stories of what life was like when your mum sort of phoned back to and introduced your dad, someone from Sudan? There wouldn't have been much of a Sudanese community here in Australia at the time.
Yeah, certainly. It's a good question. I had a funny conversation with my grandma recently, and she was telling me how the first she'd heard of it, my mum actually wrote a handwritten letter to basically send back to Australia to my grandfather and my grandmother to tell them by the time she got home, she was going to be married. So that's, yeah, something I probably would be too scared to do now. So it's pretty impressive that she did that. But anyone who's been to Adelaide knows it's a pretty quiet place. And they lived about 50 minutes from the city in a place called Gawler, which is very predominantly white. And especially in the early 80s, late 70s, there weren't many Africans around. And for Mum to bring back a black African Muslim, that would have been pretty amazing. I'm sure he turned a few heads on the Gawler streets back in the late 80s.
Has your dad told you any stories of those times, mate, of life adapting to, as you say, a pretty white suburban Australian community?
Yeah, it's funny. Dad's one who loves telling stories about how his upbringing was and how his early life was, but it's funny, he never looks back on it with any negative feelings. He always talks about all the positive things, and I'm sure he would have got a little bit back in the day, but it seems to be, he's a pretty strong man, and he's pretty proud of who he is and where he's come from. So I guess that's one of those things where if you're proud and you're happy with yourself, then no one can really offend you too much.
For Sure. So I guess, mate, obviously, as you said, your parents, it all happened pretty quickly and they got married within a matter of months, mate. But how quickly did you guys come along? As you said, you've got a brother and a sister. Are they older or younger?
Yeah, they're all older. My eldest sister is, this is bad, but I think she is about 33. I'm between 32 and 34.
Yeah. So she's probably glad that you're not too sure of her exact age. Yeah, saying I'm it sure over
she,
the radio,
she'd love that. Selfish little brother. So I'm pretty sure within probably 2 or 3 years from coming back to Australia, they started to have kids and, yeah, they had four of us.
Mate, obviously yourself, I'm guessing you developed a passion for football pretty quickly, mate. You wouldn't have got to the level you're at today if you didn't, mate. But what are your memories of in your early days and getting involved in football? And was that something that came from your parents, mate?
Yeah, my dad was a big lover of football, and he played himself in Sudan and Greece, so he brought that love over to Australia, and that was always the sport that he pushed me and my brother towards, and my sisters as well. They loved playing soccer as well, but it was when I was a kid, I was a bit of a fan of all sports, so football was only one of the sports I loved as a kid. So obviously later in life I developed more of a love and a passion for it, but as a kid I didn't really care what I was doing as long as I was outside playing with some sort of ball.
Mate, we touched on life for your dad adjusting to, I guess, a pretty different community to what he was used to. But for yourself, what was it like being, there wasn't the same sort of level. We didn't have a Ruan Tonyik and Osama Malik and Awaa Mbeel, Thomas Deng sort of being this, Sudanese Australian playing at the very highest level of the game in Australia. They didn't exist. So what was it like for you being an aspiring, I guess, younger player wanting to forge your career in professional footballer, as you said, admittedly, as you got a bit older?
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things where back then as a kid, I didn't really watch much TV and I didn't really go out to see much local football. So I guess the local football scene back in those days didn't have the same sort of coverage as it does now. So I was mainly watching sort of Premier League and World Cups, and that's where my early passion for the game started. I remember watching France 98. That was the first time I really started to pay attention and follow people's careers and sort of follow players. I reckon every country flag I know these days is because of football, from watching early World Cups and watching European Champions League. That's how you learn all the cities, the European cities and all the country, the flags.
Did you feel a connection to Africa from a young age because of your dad? Did you feel that was part of you? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, you didn't go even visit till quite later on in your life.
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess I had a good influence from my father. He was someone who was very proud of his African heritage, and he was in an African band, had an African restaurant. So I guess one side of our lives was very African. Obviously, we had a lot of family on my mum's side here, and we sort of taught us about the Australian side and the Australian way of life. So it was nice. We had a nice balance, and it's not one of those things where we were torn between which one we were. It was more so just embracing the fact that we had two backgrounds, and I think it was a great thing. Still proud of it now.
A little bit earlier before we started, you mentioned that the first time you went back to Africa and to Sudan in 2001, correct me if I'm wrong, but that was sort of well and truly the war was still raging in the country, and it was a war that saw over 2 million people die. It was one of the worst since World War II. But what was your sort of recollection of going to Sudan at the time? Did you know what to expect? Did you have any sort of vision in your mind of what this country was going to be like? And secondly, how did it add up to your expectations?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Obviously, as a 10-year-old, you don't really think about these things too much. And I remember at the time, well, I didn't know this at the time, but I remember my mum and dad telling me probably a year ago that it was actually the country's in a state of emergency when we went there. But as young kids, you're oblivious to these things and probably wouldn't have understood what it actually meant anyway. So I remember being pretty amazing. Obviously, the fact that we'd come back for the first time, my dad hadn't been back for 20, 30 years. So for him to come back as well, I just remember being just completely overwhelmed with love from so many people. We have probably 60 first cousins, and that doesn't count second cousins, third cousins, everyone's a cousin there. So it was an amazing experience, and I just remember eating, playing football and sleeping. It was a great time.
How did you feel to see your dad back home and sort of put that puzzle together of where your dad had come from? And you, I imagine you hadn't really got to get a sense of where your dad's life had been pre to being in Australia.
Yeah, it's true. Obviously, you grow up with him, and there weren't many Africans growing up. So to see him in an environment where he was like everyone else, and obviously he got to speak his native tongue, his Arabic, for the first time, I'm sure he would have enjoyed that. And for us, it was a bit of an eye-opener, being like, we're here surrounded by our family, but we can't actually communicate. Everything was translated through my dad. So I remember in 5 weeks as a 10-year-old, we picked up a fair bit, but it was more so that was the time when I was like, it's probably time to maybe think about where we've come from and take on some of these lessons and maybe learn some Arabic so I can actually speak and communicate with these family members.
Have you since done that, mate? Picked up any or?
Yeah. Look, it's one of those things where I've picked up little bits at different stages, but I've been, to be honest, pretty lazy with it. I've had a burning ambition recently to really go back, and now I feel like I'm at an age where I can really sort of understand and appreciate where I've come from, and that means learning Arabic, because without that, it's obviously difficult to communicate. And you can't really communicate with people unless you sort of know the natural language. That's how I feel anyway.
Did you feel different after that trip, mate? Did you feel more connected to where you were from, or what was the impact that trip had on you?
It's interesting, actually. I guess some people might think that you might come back to Australia and be like, I don't really belong here, or these sorts of feelings. But to be honest, I felt like I have two families, because although all my cousins here were white Australian, white Anglo-Australian, I never felt any different to them. We're very similar. Obviously, a lot of them live out in the country, and we were the townies living in the city, so that was the only time that we'd sort of felt any different. But like, I love my family on my mum's side. I love my family on my dad's side. So for me, I think it's pretty awesome to have two loving families who are completely different.
Absolutely, mate. Obviously, on the pitch, your life, at a pretty young age, you got an opportunity to play at the Club World Cup and burst onto the scene with some really great performances with Adelaide, and then made your way up to North Queensland. Professionally, what were those years like for you, mate, having had a very different background to a lot of the players you would have played with, but also similar coming into the world game where you would have had people, foreigners from overseas, from Brazil, from Europe, and that. How did you find that environment, mate?
It's funny, actually. Looking back on it, it feels like a lifetime ago, but at the same time, I can't believe that it's been almost 8-9 years ago, so it's pretty crazy to look back. I don't even feel old, but I guess I am getting a bit older now. But it's one of those things, again, football is such a diverse game, and I remember when I first came on to train with the first team in Adelaide, there was all these Brazilian guys. I remember Alamau, who I loved, Cassio was there, Cristiano, Sergio van Dijk. There was so many amazing people, and the thing is, apart from the foreigners, the names you get in any football team, you've always got Greeks, Croatians, Italians. It's such a diverse game. So I guess that wasn't such an eye-opener coming to professional football, because I'd sort of been around that my whole life. If you play football, you're surrounded by different cultures all the time, and sometimes it can get you into strife, because maybe you don't understand different customs and what's allowed and what's not. But I think that's the beautiful thing. I played for Greek clubs, Croatian clubs, Polish clubs as a kid, and through that you learn about the food, a bit of the language, you meet people, and you can sort of come to understand a little bit of what it's like for these people and to hear their stories as well, and to really sort of respect a different culture.
Did that change you much as a person, mate, in terms of your identity, sort of getting to understand all other parts of the world and sort of, I guess, understanding where you come from and that?
It's difficult to say. It might have changed my identity just in the fact that you realise how important it is to be respectful to other people. But in terms of myself, yeah, not so much. I guess it's more so developing life skills and social skills. If you don't know how to respect someone or have empathy for other people, then I don't feel like you're going to go too far in life. So luckily for me, I was constantly surrounded by people from different backgrounds, different shades, different religions, and I think that goes a long way to sort of developing a good personality.
Did you ever have a sense early on that, you know, that you wanted to make a contribution and use a platform, I guess, for football for more sort of broader things that you were passionate about? Because in 2015, you travelled over to Kenya with Awamu Bill, your former teammate at Adelaide United, to do a really worthwhile visit over there. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? And was that something that had been coming for a while, mate?
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things. For as long as I can remember, I've always liked being happy, but also more than that, seeing other people happy. And I'm not someone that can really enjoy something unless everyone else is enjoying themselves. So I guess it came from an early stage where I like doing things for other people because I guess selfishly it also makes me happy, but I guess it's a nice little circle. So when I remember Awamu Bill came up to me probably in late 2014 and was telling me about a project he was working on with his brother called Barefoot to Boots, where he was hoping to take football gear from basically all around Australia and take it back to the refugee camp he was born in Kakuma in Kenya. And when he told me about it, I thought it was an amazing idea, and he asked me to come with him, and to be honest, I was pretty flattered, and I jumped at the opportunity, and we ended up collecting close to 250 kilos worth of football gear, whether it be boots, shirts, socks, boots, and we took it over there in mid-2015, and looking back on it now, it was by far the most amazing experience of my life.
What was it that stood out when you went over there, mate? Was it the joy of the kids playing football, or was it sort of reconnecting back to something that you hadn't been to for, 14 years you hadn't been back to Africa for?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it was a lot of different things. I remember before I left, my parents were really unsure about me going because there'd been some real problems in Kenya with Somali rebels crossing the border and causing some problems there. And so obviously I went there with a little bit of doubt as to what am I doing, like, is this really a good idea? But it's funny, when I got there, and I guess also people had ideas about refugee camps, obviously I had my own ideas about what they were like, but I didn't know anything about them. I heard about these detention camps that we've got in Australia where people are basically caged up and put in prison like conditions, so I wasn't actually sure what to expect. But when I arrived there, it was basically just like a massive village. There's close to 200,000 people in the refugee camp at the moment. And the thing that stood out for me the most was no one on the street ever asked for anything. Obviously they knew we were professional footballers and from Australia and we were very lucky, but no one came to you asking for money or this or that. But if you gave them anything, whether it was soccer boots or maybe if you had a spare lolly, you gave them a lolly, their faces would just light up, and they were so appreciative of everything we gave them. And I thought it was a pretty amazing experience. It made me feel like these weren't people who were just sitting there waiting for people to help them out. It's like they just want an opportunity over there to do what we do. That's what they just want, an opportunity. And for us to sort of go there and acknowledge them and give them an opportunity to wear boots and play football, I think that was, it sort of gave them a lot of freedom to be like, I don't need people to sort of, to give me things. I can just take my ball down to the local soccer ground and spend 2 or 3 hours there playing football, and you can see the joy that it brings to the boys and girls there, and they loved it. And I think it's an amazing initiative from Awamu Bill, who's an amazing person, to be honest.
How jarring was that reality that you got to experience, say, compared to what we get to read every day in the news media and the discussion that goes on surrounding, I guess, refugees?
I guess it gave me a different perspective. Obviously, we hear a lot about what refugees bring to our country, and we're hearing it a lot, especially at the moment. I know there's been problems and issues with, obviously, I keep a close eye on what happened in the African community, and I know there's been problems with sort of violence and some sort of juvenile behaviour from young African communities, but you go there and that's just not a fair reflection of what these people are about. Obviously you're going to get bad eggs in any group, but also you've got to understand where these kids have come from. Many of them have fled and walked thousands of miles to get to the refugee camp. They probably watched their father or a family member get murdered in one of these refugee camps. Or I've heard stories. Aware's brother was telling me he was just in his refugee in his village in South Sudan, and they'd have rebel aeroplanes dropping bombs over their village. He saw his friends pass away. So it's people are coming here with pretty large mental scars, and for you to just sort of judge them based on how they might act when you're around them, and not sort of understand where they've come from and the history behind sort of the way they think, and maybe some of them do have sort of problems in terms of controlling their anger. But when you hear stories like that, you can really sort of sympathize and understand the problems that they face, and maybe just sort of disregarding them and saying let's deport them. That's not the answer. It's sort of working with them and sort of showing people that they're loved. If people come here and they don't feel appreciated, or they feel like they're outsiders, I think that's it's a way to sort of ostracize people and make them feel sort of pretty worthless, and I think that leads to some of the problems that we have here.
Perhaps maybe seems trivial to think football is the answer, but is there a role for football, and how can it sort of play in assisting these people, as you say, to perhaps, you know, feel more at home in Australia and feel part of a community, and also have something positive that they're involved in from the start that can perhaps make them feel good?
Absolutely. Well, for me, football, I made more friends playing football than I did doing anything else. School, work, wherever I was, football was, a lot of my friends came from football, and it's just a great way to build relationships. And people talk a lot about integrating, and for me there's nothing, no better way to integrate new arrivals into the country than the game they love and the game we love. It's an interesting way to sort of meet people and to sort of, it's cliche, but they talk about the universal game and the universal language, but it is, you don't have to communicate with someone to. If you have a ball, I remember walking through the streets of Morocco 3 years ago, and no one would sort of, I went with a Psycho Cernak, no one would pay us any attention, and they'd sort of be like, ah, oh, these are foreigners, let's sort of make some money off them and try and sell them something. The second we walked down with a soccer ball, we made 100 friends within probably a minute, and we had the whole street playing football. It's just one of those things where you bring a ball to anywhere and you'll be amazed how many friends you make.
Perhaps what we've just discussed there, mate, probably clashes in terms of some of the division and I guess that we're seeing now across the world, from the election of Donald Trump to Brexit, to our own perhaps policies on refugees are pretty different to what we just discussed then. What's your take on, obviously Trump has got the headlines, but even from, you know, the place that your dad called home and where he's born and from, your own dad would be on a list of the 7 countries that can't enter the US, well, for a time being couldn't. How does that sort of make you feel, and what's your reaction to the rise of that type of thing, mate?
Yeah, I guess it's a tough one, because although I probably follow a lot of American sports and like a lot of artists who come from America, it's never really been a place that I've had too much sort of interest in going to. But I guess even more so now when you hear or learn that someone like Donald Trump has been elected by the country to lead the country, it's a scary thought. And I guess as a young kid, you're always taught to appreciate and acknowledge and respect people, regardless of where they're from, their color, ethnicity. But now it's scary to think that in 2017, we've sort of taken steps back, and it's a scary thing, and I feel it's a bit of a slippery slope.
Mate, you sit in a change room alongside Uruguayans, Argentinians, yourself, Australians, people from a Balkan background.
Got Iranians.
Absolutely, yeah. Mate. And you see every week, you know, what gets made on the pitch as a result of this sort of fusion of people from all over the world, and how much that can excite Australian football fans, mate. How important do you think the game is to making sure that we really stand up to a certain type of values, and having been a really graphic representation of the benefits of multiculturalism week in, week out.
I guess it's been a good thing with football. It's, I feel like we sort of lead the way in terms of sport, obviously because of how diverse it is. And I guess the biggest thing is when you sit in a change room full of people from different backgrounds, you realise very quickly that everyone's the same. Everyone wants the same thing. Everyone just enjoys playing football. Everyone wants to be happy. Everyone wants to spend time with their families and make sure that they're safe. So really, if you look at it, no one's any different.
Finally, mate, your life here in Melbourne, anyone that follows you on Instagram knows that you've got quite a...
Not many.
I think it's on private, so there's not many people that
I've gone public recently.
Okay, no, fair enough. Well, you post some interesting stuff, mate. So in terms of, obviously, from you've got a keen interest in music, mate, can you tell me a little bit about, you said, touched on earlier, that that was a passion that was staked pretty early by your dad, being an African, being an African band himself, mate. But what sort of music are you interested in, and how much of a part of your life is that made away from football?
To be honest, it is probably a main part of my life away from football. And to be honest, to a certain extent, it plays a part during football, because very rarely do I play or train without some sort of tune playing in my head. But from an early age, I was always exposed to music. I remember going on road trips with my family, and I was lucky because we had a big van. But we had a three-seater across the middle, so it'd be my mum driving, my dad next to me, and I was the youngest because I was the smallest. I was in the middle, and I had control over the music, so I always used to play my Cat Stevens tape, even as a young kid. So I always loved music, and now it's just sort of grown, and coming to Melbourne, there's an amazing music scene here, and I've been lucky enough to meet some good people, and I guess I hate to say it, but there is obviously a bit of a hipster scene, and I do get called a hipster at times, but I don't agree with that. But yeah, a lot of my music and fashion choices are definitely questioned in the change room, but I'm fine with that.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Asama Malik, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That brings to an end our chat with Asama. I can't thank him enough for his honesty and openness throughout. One of the A-League's brilliant people on and off the pitch.